Enter if you dare this ghastly conversation of teens fraught with despair and recent lacerations. Final girl, chase after her, don't let her get away. But first, the Slumber Podcast Massacre.
Welcome to Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA. Fuck, that's Tim. Ah, that's Andy. And this is a podcast about horror. Every week, Tim and I get together. We talk about a different movie from the horror genre, from your well-known classic down to that rare gem coughing up a hairball at the back of your video store shelf. This week, we are jazzed because it's the end of Evil Dice Tonight. It's finally over.
What was the first one? I was trying to think of this yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Good question. I don't even have the original list anymore.
It was a couple of years ago. It was summer. It was the beginning of summer.
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah. I'll look it up eventually.
I like to think that there's a Slumber Podcast Massacre nerd out there being like, actually.
Babadook.
Yeah.
It was the Babadook.
Oh, fuck, it was Babadook. God damn.
Yeah.
Very.
Or the witch.
One or the other.
Yeah. Maybe Vavitch.
The Vavitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good recall.
Yeah. But that doesn't matter.
No.
Because that was so long ago. And we're finally at the end. It came down to two. We put a bullet in the brain. Of the Sixth Sense, which was a question of trivia this week. So I was like, oh,
yeah,
we were just talking about this because we're never going to cover it.
Yeah, it's like everywhere I go, something reminds me of it, you know, that kind of thing.
So that's gone, dead forever. But what we are doing from 2016, c'est la merde, it's raw. Tim, what's your experience with raw food?
Oh, I'll tell you exactly. Now, I have to stair-step it back a little bit because my experience with raw food, to answer your question right off the bat succinctly, is next to nothing, okay? It's not that I haven't had the opportunity. I remember going to a hibachi restaurant, and I thought that I knew sushi. And I was trying to be impressive. And so I ordered like a fancy, like the most expensive fancy plate of whatever sushi they had. And they brought out a plate of something that, while very colorful, basically looked as if it was food turned inside out. And I just looked at it and I'm like, that is not a California roll. And so I did not eat any of that. I think it's called sashimi. Is that the plate where it's the real fucking crazy raw
where
shit?
It's got the fish on top.
It looks like a
like
tongue.
It's not in the roll. Yeah.
It looks like they have yellow tongues and red tongues and green tongues. It looks like it's inside out. So I didn't eat that.
You didn't eat it?
Did not eat
it's
it.
It's good.
I bet it is.
Where'd you have it?
We had a local, very authentic.
Okay, maybe don't eat it.
Hibachi, yeah. So there was that. The other thing is that I love a raw, well, what I think is raw steak.
Uh-huh.
And now I know that's different than like what we're talking about where it's, I'm sorry, not raw steak, rare steak.
Okay. Right.
So the reason why I say, quote unquote, rare steak, what I like is not actually a rare steak. And I know this because of all the times that I've ordered it, only one restaurant in my lifetime has ever brought it out truly rare.
Uh-huh.
And that I don't care for. That was like, it was purple. It was, they say cool, I'm going to go with cold.
Right.
And but it wasn't even that. The texture of it, I'm like, how is meat not meat all the time? But it was like gel. It was like a thick gel.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like more the consistency of, I don't want to say fat, but it wasn't like, it just didn't have that consistency of meat.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, fuck that. But here's the thing. I will still order it rare at every restaurant I go to because we're not like in a major metropolitan city that's going to know how to do that.
Right.
These pussies in the fucking kitchen refuse to make a rare steak.
Well, yeah, they don't want to be liable, like you start projectile vomiting in the restaurant.
I guess so.
You had a raw steak.
Which I've done, but not in that instance. But yeah, I'll tell you that story in a second. But so What I really, really like is a very much on the rare side of a medium rare. That's yeah. what I like.
Yes. I always say medium rare in hopes that they take it off too early.
Well, if I want a medium steak, I'll say medium rare. Because that's what I get half the time. Oh, okay. If I say medium rare, they bring it out and it's just that beige brown color all the way across. And I'm like, well, that's a nice medium steak.
Yeah.
So I do. I know that I like that, but... Yeah, I can't say that I've been to a restaurant where they've actually had like a tartare dish on the menu and I've ordered that. I have no concept of, oh,
well, you're aren't you in luck?
Fucking kidding.
I tricked you.
You did.
You thought you I didn't did. Get tartare for the show.
Dude, you rule.
But we got a little tartare no courtesy shit. Of Maine and Lincoln.
Wow.
George Jerovich. Chef George Jerovich, sorry. I feel like I know George, and I don't call him chef like the respect I should. So I'm going to do that more.
So
this is a salmon tartare. They did not have any beef tartare. I'm sorry to say.
Well, I've got to start somewhere.
Yeah. So here, I'm going to give you half of this. It's a nice here. If you want to see the presentation, of course,
well, that's
this
cool.
is
it,
a yeah. This is
neat.
A Hafalutin restaurant that
it,
made this.
It looks like a backwards oatmeal cream pie.
It's got it's got a creme fraiche on top.
Okay, so. I know what that is.
Perfect. Then I don't have I don't to really, explain it. And it's a joke from South Park or whatever.
Okay. Wow.
So yeah, this is. Let's hope okay. we don't.
Now I got it. Let me just say this though.
Look at this. You get a little crostini.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's how you eat it. So you're gonna take that and you're gonna dip. You're just gonna kind of like if you want to use this fork.
Okay.
Please, by all means,
spread it on there a little bit. Okay.
But yeah.
So yeah, just to paint the picture here. When we came down to the studio, I had come up with the idea of having some raw meat whilst recording last week. And you were very excited about it. And so I really kind of thought you were going to follow through with it. We come down here tonight and I mention it and you're like, oh, shit. Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, blah, blah,
How
blah.
How was the acting?
Then
Pretty
he,
good.
It's excellent. Award yeah, winning. You. Award winning. but he pulls out what it, most of us would use for is like a toiletry bag, like
it's
a shaver's
my daughter's
bag.
Lunchbox.
Okay. That works too. So I am going to, as we speak here, ingest. Yeah. This is raw.
Yeah. So it is, and I looked it up. I'm like, what makes it tartare? Like, what makes it special? Nothing. It's like, just make sure it's really good.
Oh, that
quality
is good.
And cold is main thing.
That is
don't let
good.
It sit around. You want to eat it right away.
So it's no.
been sitting in some ice packs for the last hour.
That is nice.
Yeah.
No, because now, I'm still.
And yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it has a lot of great herbs and flavor in it with a little buttery crostini. Like the whole thing is really good. But even just the cold. And I do not like fish that much. I'm not. And if I am, it's more tuna, like rarely salmon, but I will eat fucking five of these things.
What's nice is...
Oh, because they're not cheap.
What's nice is the first tastes that hit you are those, like the herbs and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then it finishes with that salmon flavor.
What do you think of the texture on that?
This is a little...
It's minced very small, so it's... You don't have to chew a lot, which is nice.
No, I like that. It's a little bit of a mental struggle for me because, as you know, I'm a new cat owner, and my the worst part of my day is feeding my cat its soft food in the morning because I cannot, for whatever reason, I have such a physical aversion to that. But this is fantastic.
Nice.
This is kind of, even the, if you just told me this was
you know, everyone
like,
loves when people eat on mic, so I was very excited.
But I like it because it's like, if nobody told you what it was, you would just be like, oh, this is just some cold salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Like the flavor is still there.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that is good. That's really good. The bread is great too.
The bread's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great place.
And this is safe.
Yes. I mean, it's, you know, technically the USDA would be like, You probably shouldn't, but we, as long as the warning is there of eating undercooked meats can be problematic or whatever the, you know, whatever the jargon is.
So not to ruin the mood here, but I was actually thinking of a question this week, and for no good reason, but I knew that we were going to be talking about food, and I decided to take that literally full circle. And now cool can be defined as maybe it's the historic building, maybe it's the geographic location, but what would you say is like the most like the coolest or most interesting place you've ever taken a shit?
Taking a shit?
Yeah. I got the White House.
I probably do have a cool answer for this. Can I think of it? I've shit in the Louvre.
Oh, that's good.
That's pretty cool. And I've taken a nap in the Louvre. Like, I've essentially lived in the Louvre.
Okay.
I just had to hit up the food court. I would have hit all three of the important things. Yeah, man, expelling food is how we're getting here, right? The raw stuff that's left over.
Have you ever shit on a plane before?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. That's kind of,
I mean, I tried not, because I am much larger now than I was, even as a, you know, teenager or young 20-year-old. Bathrooms are not built for a guy my size. The last time I took a flight, I took a picture in the mirror to show Nancy that I had to tilt my head all the way to the side just to stand up in it.
You had to do that upwards that kind of like typical, like I'm going to hold the phone above me, girl pose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, this is fantastic. This really is. As far as, I'll tell you what, I don't, it wasn't really the place that I took a shit, but the most like dramatic shit I ever took was it should come as no surprise, wild boar.
Oh. That made you shit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And let me just say this, it's wild going in and wild coming out, because it was, and it was actually in a bathroom with no door on the stall. Oh. So it was just kind of like, this is like a community. It felt like a ritual.
Where was that?
At our local bowling alley.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And which is like, it was a really nice restaurant. So I kind of like went full circle with like the locations.
Yeah.
It's kind of like me shitting, like literally shitting on the bowling alley. Like I'm going to go eat some fancy food over here and I'm going to shit it out over here.
Yeah.
But no, that was exciting. So
they had wild boar at the bowling alley?
No, they had it at a very nice restaurant downtown.
Oh,
it's no
okay.
longer here, actually.
Okay.
Do you remember Clayton's?
Of course.
Yeah,
it was best Clayton's. Cheesecake I ever had. I had
really?
It there. Yeah, it was like the first time where I was like, it was like very tall and had fruit in it, and it didn't taste fake, and I was just like, oh my God, this is incredible. Mm. Yeah, how is that without the bread?
Just just went in no bread, and
I'll go that route, no problem.
I think this is, and I'm no expert here, obviously it's the first time, but I'm feeling like the challenge here is, it's not so much the meat, because it's like, well, you didn't do anything with it. It's what you add to it, and whatever they did is absolutely delicious.
Mm-hmm.
This is great.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
I'm glad you like it. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks, Chef, Chef George.
Yes. That was absolutely fantastic. Is that something on the menu?
Yes, that is normally on there all the time. He sometimes has a beef tartare special, which is also, we will get both. We'll be like, okay, cool. We'll have one salmon, one beef.
I would order that. I absolutely would. And thank you for that. That was fantastic. Here's the thing. People eat food for a lot of different reasons. One of them is flavor.
Yeah.
And if you want that, that is fucking chock full of flavor.
Yeah.
It was great.
Dr. Brian loves going in there and then telling his waitress, yeah, I was here the last time and I had the tartare. It feels a little undercooked.
Mm.
Mm. Loves it. This is his favorite joke.
I bet it kills just every time.
They are always like, thank you for putting a smile on my face.
Right.
I don't even know if he listens anymore. We can just say, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean,
I haven't gotten an actually email in a long time.
Well, it's not as bad as I read a recent article about an actor who was just, I mean, I can't believe that this even got published. Like he's a young actor and such like a prick. And the interviewer was like, I'm just going to fucking expose this guy.
Uh-huh.
And his big joke was that the highball glass at the table was modeled after his cock, is what he said, which I don't know. I mean, maybe if you had one of those, like those tall, like frosted glass ones,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that they put like cocktails in.
yeah.
Maybe you'd have something. But I don't know if you really want to advertise the highball glass cock.
Yeah. It's, well, a highball glass is.
Is it shorter, though? I mean, it's a highball glass is no like 3.5 inches tall.
Oh, OK. But proportionally, though,
I mean, if you're a girth person.
Yeah, I don't know.
There is that. But yeah, it's equivalent to.
It's an interesting place to have shit.
Mm. yeah, no. we're really. Well, it's the raw episode here. Yes. We're just raw dogging this whole thing.
We didn't rehearse this like we normally do.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, every episode we usually have a very tight script we like to stick to.
So, okay, so let me just ask you this. Obviously, I'm guessing that the first time that you tried raw meat was not as a kid. It was probably as an adult where you had the stomach for it, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I did like probably as a late teen. That's when I was like, I want to get my burgers a little more rare.
Okay.
But yeah, certainly not, you know, not a fish guy. So sushi was off the table.
Is that still that way today?
No, because if I'm in the right place, like, cause when I, when Dr. Brian was working in St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
He took us to, he was a member of a club.
Okay.
He's a very successful doctor. And
they were surrounded by all the fresh water in St. Louis.
yeah. but they take care of you in this club. Very nice club. And we had like the back room reserved. So we were living large, smoking cigars, drinking port, like,
oh, nice.
Ridiculous things for a, like, look at me. Why is that happening? Right. So we were hanging out with this other guy who had just become a member.
Mm.
And his job was like finding land to build Home Depots on. Like that was his job.
Yes.
Was scouting Home Depot locations. And yeah, he was a blast. We kicked it off and we were like, Brian said something about sushi and I was like, and I was, you know, feeling wild, like feeling good. We were having a good time. And so they ordered it from this really nice place close by and they delivered it to us, that which was not really a thing at the time. Right. Like there was no DoorDash and shit. Like nice restaurants weren't just like, yes, we'll deliver it. Like I think one of the guys at the club went to get it. But man, I had that and I was like, oh, this is. Like, this is not supermarket gas station sushi, right? Like,
right.
The rolls were huge and just everything hit so well. Like, I was like, okay. So I have to be, like, if I'm in L.A., if I'm in Chicago, I do not eat that shit here in town. I'm sure it's fine. It's a mental thing for me. I don't trust fish. It's not anyone else. It's the fish I don't trust. Sneaky little fuckers.
I had, like most people, a martial arts instructor that was very picky about sushi. I don't know if that's a general thing for the public, but yeah. But no, so you're not alone. Like he was like, once you get a taste for really good stuff, it kind of kills your taste for the garbage, I guess. So there's that. Yeah, scouting locations for Home Depots. Like I'm just trying to think of like the most hardcore place you could go. I'm thinking Golgotha, which translates to Hill of the Skull, which is where the crucifixion took place.
Oh, okay.
Like, what if you were like right there and people are like, where's the lumber section? And it's like, we got three of them.
Yeah. Please.
No, I'm kidding. That's terrible. But I mean, still, like,
it's not terrible. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. But anyhow, have you ever heard
about how easy it is to market that?
Have you ever heard Henry Rollins talk about visiting the Holy Land?
No.
It's so funny because, you know, he's a pretty intense dude and he was just there and he just said, like, being when he was there at like the Red Sea at Golgotha, where like whether you believe these things or not, like some of these biblical things took place like in history. So he's like, when you're standing there and he was so overcome that all he could do was like clench his fist and bend over and just scream, fuck! fuck, like, which I think God, probably nobody else spoke the language, but yeah, like he was just overcome. Like, I can't believe that I'm in that place.
Yeah.
So, and then it showed him at the end, like floating on the Red Sea.
Yeah.
And it's the salt content is insane. Like, he's not even trying. Like,
yeah.
He's just like
very buoyant,
thrashing around.
Buoyant.
Buoyant. Yeah. And, well, that brings up a good question. Is the soap called Life Buoy? People say Life Buoy, but it's spelled Life Buoy.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which was the only soap that I could use when I was younger.
Yeah, it should be Buoy then.
Yeah, it should be Life Buoy.
Oh.
Which sounds weird.
Yeah.
David
Buoy.
But no, I would like to now try more raw meat. And I love protein.
I mean, I can't think of many other ways to prepare it where I'd be like, check that out.
Well,
there are a lot of good tartars. We went to a place in Chicago before a show one time and had buffalo tartar. That was awesome. Or bison tartar. That's what it was.
Okay, so that you'd have. Now, I have had plenty of bison before. The thing about bison is it's really lean, but you got to season the fuck out of it because it's so lean that it doesn't really have any flavor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a good
game. Pretty gamey, too.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We used to have, there's a restaurant
downtown.
Isn't
it funny we have a name for the taste an animal has because it eats its natural diet?
Yeah.
It's like, how dare you? Oh, God, did this thing eat what it's supposed to? Ooh, tastes weird.
Right. Yeah. God, that really is what it is then, right?
Yeah. It tastes gamey because it eats its natural food that we're not used to.
We have
eating.
Not imposed our will on its entire existence to the point of creating it. And it tastes like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well,
humans, we're funny.
That grass-fed beef is pretty damn good.
It's real good.
It makes it for a great burger. Have you ever had a burger before where you're just like, I've had plenty of burgers, but there have been some that I've bitten into where I'm like, my God.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yes.
What's the best burger you've ever had? Well, you went to that place in Chicago that was kind of known for burgers, wasn't it? That was like maybe a year or two ago.
Oh, yeah. I met a TikTok star there.
That's right.
That was crazy.
What was the name of that restaurant?
The Loyalist.
The Loyalist. Yeah.
She doesn't work there anymore, but yeah. Yeah, I was looking for good burgers because we had just seen the menu. Burgers play a part in that movie. And I was like, God damn, I want a good burger. And we were going up to watch White Noise at the Music Box. Mm. Not the cool horror movie, but the weird Noah Baumbach movie. I was like, oh, we'll go get a burger. And then, our waitress, I was like, I thought I had done improv or something with her. And I was like, you're just very familiar to me. And she's like, I'm on TikTok. And I was like, oh, my God. Yes, that's what
it
is. Yeah. And then she was like, brought us some shots. She's like, you guys are like the chillest couple I've ever served.
Oh, nice.
We were like, oh, thank you so much. And she's like, what are you guys doing tonight? We're like, we're actually heading up to the Music Box to see White Noise. And she's like, my husband is at White Noise at the Music Box. We're like,
that's
no
awesome.
Fucking way. So yeah, cool night. Yeah, awesome.
Was that burger,
awesome burger
good?
The burger was great. They have two burgers on the menu that are both spectacular.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's your best burger?
You know what? It was actually.
And then we're getting into this.
It was in, it was in South Bend. It was the first, the advertising was working on me, but it was the first grass-fed, burger that I had ever had. And it was at a place called the Madison Oyster Bar, which is a three-leveled bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's now like a hookah bar, I want to say, but it's a really interesting place. And I bit into it. And the one thing that I remember most was, and this could just probably be any burger, but it was like really, it had that a little bit of crispiness on the outside, but it was really, and this is going to sound so like just pedestrian, salty.
It
was so good. Like that crispy outer, like salty edge was so fucking delicious that like something as mundane as a burger should not fucking taste that good.
Yeah.
But, I shouldn't say that, though. Burgers fucking rule.
They do. And so, I know people go crazy with their burgers, and then sometimes I'm just like, give me just that, like two patties with cheap cheese on, like, a buttered regular bun. That's all I want.
You know what I'm a little over now? Bacon cheeseburgers. They were great.
Dude, I have not gotten bacon on a cheeseburger in I don't know how long.
But it's just like, I want that burger flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of flavor,
let's enough of this heat chemical reaction cooking. Let's get into this.
Wow.
End of an era. Evil dice tonight.
Yeah, dice tonight. And we're talking about Ra.
We're getting Ra.
Ra.
All right. It's Raw from 2016. We had so many funny bits about Eddie Murphy and wrestling.
Yeah.
It's fine. Instead, we ate. Okay. So, yeah, let's do the Wikipedia facts, and then we'll get into this. So this is Raw 2016, written and directed by Julia. Do you have a pronunciation on this?
I really don't, but I felt like it should be easier than it
Ducournau?
Looks.
Ducournau?
Yeah, let's go with that.
All right. Yeah. My zero effort is Julia Ducournau.
Ducournau.
It stars Garance Marier, Ella Rumpf, and Laurent Lucas.
You got a Ella Rumpf.
Sorry. Oh my God. It had a budget of $3.8 million and a box office of about $3.1 million. I don't know, man. It's all European to me. Let's do Nan some, and then we'll get into some spoilers. Justine is a lifelong vegetarian, and she is on her way to a very prestigious veterinary school where her parents met, and her sister Alex is already in attendance. On her first night there, she meets her roommate, Adrian, right before a massive hazing ritual begins. During her class photo, they're doused in blood and then forced to eat raw rabbit kidneys. Declining at first, Justine reluctantly eats the kidney, but finds later that night that she is suddenly suffering from an intense rash. The next day, her cravings for meat have suddenly intensified with her sneaking to the fridge to eat raw chicken. Alex tries to help Justine adapt to her new lifestyle at the school, but while she attempts to give Justine a bikini wax to help her be more desirable, she accidentally cuts Alex's finger off. Alex passes out, but awakens to find Justine gnawing on her severed finger. Blaming her dog, Alex takes Justine to a long stretch of road where she causes a severe accident, showing Justine that she can sate her cravings by feeding off of the victims of the accident. At another party, Justine is cut. I did not really read through this. This movie's crazy. At another party, Justine is covered in paint and forced to make out with another member of the school. In the heat of the moment, she bites a large chunk out of the boy's lip and runs away in shame. That night, as she seeks comfort from her roommate Adrian, the two begin to make love, with Justine attempting to bite him several times, eventually sinking her teeth into her own arm, euphoric with pleasure. But as her unique cravings continue to grow, tensions between the two sisters begin to strain their relationship until the two come to blows, and more importantly, bites. Will Justine be able to simmer her aggression back down until their relationship is back to being well done? Or will things come to a bloody head as they realize that they like it raw? That was the hardest, dumbest way to come into the title of this movie, but there's really no way to do it. And yeah, reading through the sum, it is kind of like a weird, just kind of like jumping through things.
Well, yeah. And I mean,
that are all important. They all feel important.
It's definitely not what I'm used to with scenes of sisters, bikini waxes, and fingers. Mm-hmm. But it's got its own flavor. Now, I almost told myself that I shouldn't say this because it's going to ruin everything that I've said about episodic movies where I can't stand them.
Yeah.
But this movie kind of sort of is. Like, it has these scenes that are very just isolated from each other, but the scenes are so good that it's fine.
Yeah.
It's totally forgivable. Probably because the tone is very consistent throughout the entire movie. So that helps. But yeah, we have this director. She's really just kind of a... It makes me wonder if she wrote a story about a sort of superstar, like, because our lead character is going into this veterinary school as kind of like known as being super smart.
Yeah.
And our director was sort of that. Like, she started film school and like started winning awards at Cannes.
Oh, okay.
Like right away. And just never really stopped, actually. Like, started with her short films, like, hey, I'm just trying something. I got an award for it. How about I make a full-length feature film? Another award for that? Like, she can't stop winning awards.
Yeah. Poor thing.
interesting background and not all that surprising that we would have a body horror film here, because she was raised by a gynecological mother or a gynecologist mother who was gynecologically inclined.
It's good when we try to take that extra step, yeah, though, to make it sound a little smarter.
And a dermatologist father, which I'm sure is actually the order that you would want that in as a daughter, that like, because you don't want to be like, hey, Ma, I think I got something down here. Dad, would you come take a look at this? Now, I will say this, though. She does have very nice skin. Did you see the director?
Yeah.
Very nice skin. I can't speak to the health of her vagina, but I'm sure that it's pristine.
Yeah.
But she really likes that body.
I also saw her accolades. She won the Palme d'Or for Titane,
yeah,
her next movie. First solo female director to win Palme d'Or.
Really?
Yeah.
She's really something. I mean, she really is. And this body horror thing with coming from a medical family is a legit thing. Like, my dad grew up with a father who was an oral surgeon. So there were medical books laying all over the house. They had a human skull in the house, a real one.
Nice.
So when you
I'm assuming my neighbors did too, but it was
right
in a crawl space or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Those poor neighbors, may they never listen to the show. But but no, when you do that, though, and when you grow up with that, it really does. Like, I remember going with my dad to my grandpa's office, and his practice, and we're sitting in his office waiting for him to get done. And it's weird to be like 4 years old and see your grandfather walk in covered in blood, like literally just blood running down all the front of him. Ugh. But when you experience that, you kind of like get past it, and then you get really sort of fascinated, because like she was saying, doctors have a very upfront but distanced way of talking about the human body, mm-hmm, which makes perfect sense. So to be raised by two of them, you'd be like, yeah, let's get in there and fucking show that shit. So yeah, she went to film school, really was successful right off the bat. Raw was her very first feature. And that flesh fascination, as she calls it, was happening right from the very beginning. But there's a lot more here. I mean, all of this body stuff, flesh eating, all of these sorts of things are all used metaphorically in this movie. They serve a certain purpose visually, of course.
Yeah.
But what she's really interested in is what it means to be human. And I've thought about this before. Like, if you were like an operating doctor who had been inside of people before,
yeah,
that way, like, I would think that you would just sort of look at humanity differently somehow.
I wish I knew one. I would ask him.
Right, a friend of the show maybe. but that's just,
yeah, it probably definitely takes a different mentality and perspective,
right? And then also she was interested in the, what she called the monstrosity of the teenage coming of age years. Big fan of David Lynch, big fan of David Cronenberg, not a big fan of a 70s photographer by the name of, I've got his name here. He is, I'll find it here. It is, a photographer that was really famous that none of us would really ever know. But
glad we're trying to find.
But the thing about this,
he hurt her in some way, I'm assuming.
Well, the thing was, is that he had all these great photos in the 70s that to us now would read as like filtered.
Yeah.
Beautiful people, beautiful women, beautiful people of all ages, colors, everything that you could imagine. And he was this renowned photographer for capturing such these moments of beauty. But to her, to someone like her, especially with her background, it meant nothing. Like, she wants the sweat. She wants the pores. She wants the imperfections.
Okay.
And so we definitely get that, you know, in this movie. She also, I thought this was interesting. She is very, very adamant, despite winning the award that you mentioned, very, very adamant about separating her gender from her accomplishments. She's like, I don't want to have, she's like, I just want to be judged for my work. I don't want anything else to play into it. And
so when someone says, oh, you're the first solo woman to win the Palme d'Or, she's like, right, I won the Palme d'Or. That's what you're saying.
Right, exactly. And so that, so as she's approaching this, she's using the cannibalism in the movie as a metaphor for the horrors and the uncertainty of coming of age. What this movie is really about isn't, I don't even know if it's so much about cannibalism or so much about even coming of age, even though that's what it's all wrapped up in. It's really about being nonconformist. Mm. And finding a way to establish your individuality without taking it too far, which we find out at the end of this movie can have negative consequences. But at the same time, still being yourself, which is where, you know, we get all of the hazing rituals. Now, one thing that's kind of interesting, because this movie was shot in Belgium.
Okay.
So she was wanting, for whatever reason, I'm not even sure why this was a goal of hers, but she wanted like an American style college campus, whatever that means to her.
Yeah.
But she's like, we don't have those in France.
Yeah.
So, which makes good sense. So she was,
well, that would explain the, I guess, attitude and activities of the school.
Yeah.
Because this is the most hazing I've ever, like, the hazing in this is preposterous.
Right.
And then you go, at a veterinarian school?
Yeah. Like, I know that you guys mostly probably care more about animals than you do people, but pump the brakes a little bit here. Like, we're all humans. It was shot in Belgium where they speak Dutch, German, and French.
Yeah, we covered that. Do you not remember covering Belgium a little bit?
Oh, no, I said that on purpose. Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay.
We know. I wanted to say it like I knew and hadn't like that. I wasn't clueless about it. Yeah, we've established that now. Dutch, German, and French.
And I know it sounds like I just said called the country Belgian, but I said Belgium. Belgium. I definitely said Belgium.
Yeah, although we did question whether or not they spoke Belgish in the last episode. So there is that. We're growing. So what's interesting is that she was over in Belgium and she was talking with her co-producer about where are we going to find this school? And she was saying, like, I want something that feels like that it's weird. I want it to be sort of angular and kind of cold, but I also want it to have some sort of like funkiness to it or whatever. And I just don't know where to find that. And literally a stranger who was in like the food court that they were in walked over and he's like, we have that in my city. And they're like, oh, really? And
looks he's like a dystopian paradise.
Right. So he's like, he hopped on their computer and he pulled up this school in his town. And they're like, fuck yeah, that's exactly what we
Holy
want.
Shit.
She said it was really weird.
That's awesome.
But and then she found our I'm going to say co-star, not supporting. I mean, the role of Alex, her sister.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to say a co-star.
Yeah.
Who was classically trained in trombone. So I guess that means she likes flesh and bone. Sorry, I've been waiting all day.
No, that's good. Yeah. That's good. That's
but anyhow, good. So she found her from a skinhead movie where she was the only woman in it and didn't even realize that there was a woman in that movie because she was just so hardcore in it and really a phenomenal actress. And that's probably, I mean, is there a false acting step in this entire film?
No. I mean, we've talked about that. I might have even mentioned it last week, but it's kind of one of those things where you kind of take their word for it because they're speaking a language I don't know.
Right.
So I'm like, does this sound dumb? Like, to me, it seems amazing. I mean, the nonverbal stuff translates. So I'm assuming the verbal stuff is also to the caliber that the nonverbal stuff is at.
Right.
But yeah, they all seem, I believe they were all veterinarians.
Yes. Yeah, right. I've only known a couple. Right. As we know, I haven't had many pets. But yeah, it's this is yet another movie, and this kind of ties back into last week, where her goal was, I'm going to set up the realism first. I'm not going to, I mean, granted, the movie does open with a car crash, but I'm going to set up like, you know, a mom, a dad, a daughter, dropping her off at college dynamic. And what is so effective about that is that if you spend a good chunk of the beginning of your movie trusting that your audience is going to hang in there to set up that realism, it throws your audience completely off kilter as far as their expectations of kills. Mm-hmm. When you're watching a Friday the 13th movie, I mean, it's practically like a drumbeat. You right. know, like the kills are coming at a regular pace. The music cues are there. You know that it's happening. You feel it happening. They give kind of a cheap, like, crescendo of strings, and you're mm-hmm. like, yeah, somebody's about to die.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's just kind of like, oh, this is just really just very realistic.
Yeah.
And but what that's what's so great about it. And really the movie, I'm really trying to remember watching it for the first time.
Anytime, well, I'll say that it is weird to think that, yeah, I would say the people and the way they kind of interact and even all of the kind of cannibalism stuff feels real, even though to me the school feels like nothing else in the world. Cause yeah, I mean the hazing in it.
Talk about that for a second.
Okay. Real quick. Because here, my tolerance for hazing is zero. So, like, my first night at a school, when the upperclassmen come in and start throwing my mattress out the window and make me walk outside, I'm like, absolutely not. I don't even like school, so I'm kind of here against my own will. I'm certainly not going to play into your dumb power trip. Like, that I need to feel privileged to like go to your school or whatever, like whatever the fucking dumb reason. Hayes, well, I know the reason. It is a power trip. But so, yeah, I would have zero tolerance for the hazing. But yeah, the hazing in this school is, I mean, yes, they say it's for a week, but it's the first week. Like, you are there the first week. You're still getting acclimated. And it is a school wide thing. It's not like I'm going to join a fraternity and I get hazed for that. It's like, no, simply by getting through admissions, you now have to, you know, your mattress gets thrown out, which they seem to sit out there for days. Like, it feels like a couple days later, she comes through and is like rifling through shit.
Right.
That's still outside windows. And even in the beginning of that, her roommate literally walks in as that's all happening. So I'm like, where the fuck has he been? She seems to be the only one who's not aware that this hazing happens. Everyone else seems ready to go along with it. But the level is, yeah, it's just like you get blood thrown on you. You have to eat this. Then also, we're having a rave on campus.
Yeah.
For all night long, and you have to go to that too.
Right. Right. There must be just like this pervasive notion that like our level of getting sued for malpractice is much lower than people that right. work on humans. So we don't have to study that. I mean, hard.
Yeah. One of the jokes in Rick and Morty is one of the characters is a horse doctor and she like has not made it, you know, like that's a terrible profession to be.
But I will say, speaking of horses, they have one really good scene that is probably longer than most movies would give it, where we actually see like a procedure with a horse.
It's really cool.
And it's
is that a real
awesome.
Horse?
I got it. Fuck, it has to be,
it
dude.
It looked like it.
It is like from the injection of the ketamine to like, I'm like, oh, so it really is horse tranquilizer and not just like what my friends enjoy. But so from that to like putting the, it's not a bit, but it's like something to open the mouth.
Yeah. Just they crank kind of, the mouth open.
Yeah.
It's like a vice to crank it open. Then just the way he pulls that tongue aside to put, it's like a
yeah
breathing tube. I don't know.
They intubate it. Yeah.
Okay.
And so.
Yeah. And then it's like flipped on its back in a crane. So it's straight up. It's the wildest thing. But and it's just all kind of happening very slowly and clinically, for lack of a better word. And it's so fun to watch.
And by the time it's done, you're like, I'm still not over the whole tongue part. Like, right, like
the tongue is
somebody
nuts.
Was just like pulling wet clothes out of a washer to throw it into the dryer. I'm like, how do you just fucking grab that giant ass tongue? But it's, but you're right. It's so, it's just neat.
Yeah.
It's very cool to watch, and I'm glad that they did that because it lends some credibility to the school. Right. But you're right. I, you know, the hazing thing, I know where she's coming from. And I think as I read a lot about this director, she's a very, very unique person. And honestly, I swear to God, anything that I'm about to say, it literally does not have any sort of political leanings toward it whatsoever. She, I think, is just fascinated by the freedom that humans have.
Yeah.
And the prisons that they put themselves in.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking about this.
Yeah, this is much a discovery as it is a rebelling against your parents, or like this story can be told without the cannibalism, like in a Catholic school or something like that, you know?
Well, doesn't it feel like to you that, I mean, I know that there's colleges all over the country and that, you know, while you do hear about some crazy shit that happens, by and large, things go okay. But I do feel like that process of being under such a watchful eye for all of the years of your life and then sent off to college, which might for some people be on the other side of the country,
yeah,
or in a foreign country, let alone that, like, it seems like you're skipping a step there. And the freedom that you're suddenly given is massive compared to anything that you've known prior to that.
Yeah.
So I think that that's what this movie is exploring, is being sort of thrust into this adulthood that you're really not ready for yet. I mean, my God, have you not been to some college parties and seen, whether it's guys or girls, and you're looking at them and you're like, that person is hanging on by fucking thread. Yeah. Like, the eyes are focusing on everything and nothing at the same time. And like, I mean, I have seen some people just in God awful shape. So yeah, it is a little scary. But she was talking about how, what it, like, if you read this stuff about this director, and not in a, I don't know, like an overly academic way, she's just very, very heartbroken at how people limit themselves. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it like this, I'll give you a really easy example. One time I thought about how fun it would be to, like, just go into the bar and have a completely, like, bloodstained t-shirt on. Mm-hmm. And just, not on Halloween, right, just go in with that. And it sounds crazy. Or think about, like, maybe a girl walking into the bar in, like, full, like, 50s, like, poodle skirt, tight, you know, short sleeve sweater, hair in a ponytail, saddle shoes. Everybody would be like, oh, my God, like, look at that girl.
Or, yeah.
Oh, I love your outfit. And it's literally clothes. And we're adults. And we would freak out over that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that just goes to show that, like, people's willingness, and I trust me, I don't want you to be.
You know, there's a good chunk of our audience listening to you say this and are just having a nice chuckle to themselves.
Well, that's fair. That's completely fair. I will say this, though. Were there times that I did stuff for attention? Yes. There may have been. But there were other times that I did stuff where
the first step is admitting you have a problem.
That's right. But there were other times where it's like, I just think that this looks like, I like how I feel. Like, I think this looks cool.
Yeah, listen, I also want to go on record. I don't want to take anything away from your fashion sense because it's impeccable.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And I just like the furs. Like, I honestly thought when I started wearing the furs that I was gonna get, like, fucking red paint thrown on, like, people were gonna hate it.
Yeah.
And it went the other way, but I just did that for me. But the thing is, again, we're just talking about fashion. I don't want to live in a world full of people to be like, you know, oh, I just, like, painted this painting, do you want to see it, because I felt so free that I painted this. Like, look at what I did. Like, no, that's garbage. That's doing something for other people. But it is true what she's saying, that how blindly we just accept this.
I still don't have the guts to wear the skirts. I got three nice skirts upstairs.
And they're good. I wear kilts, and kilts are comfortable as fuck, with the purse on the front, by the way, with the spore on. And so I love it. Every time I put it on, I'm like, motherfucker, I should do this every day.
Yeah.
But the point is that what she's trying to make with the hazing, because she said that she didn't go into detail, but she talked about how she very much has been a hazer, not just hazed, but a hazer, and then kind of questioning herself later on in life to be like, why did I go along with that? Like,
yeah,
what compelled me to think that was okay?
I had a guy I worked with who went to school at UCLA, and he was telling me about his fraternity and about this hazing that was going on. And I could tell, like, probably by the look on my face, because I think it's the dumbest thing. Yeah. I like get it. I don't like not having the grades to pledge a fraternity is probably the greatest thing that ever happened in my life. Because I really would have had no tolerance for it anyway. But just I could tell by the look on my face. He was just like, yeah, just me and a couple of my buddies were just kind of like standing in the back of the room, like kind of chuckling about it. I'm like, no, you were not. You were right dead center doing it with everyone else. Like, absolutely. Come on.
And the truth of it, you're very right, because I will say this. There is a camaraderie that comes from group suffering.
Yeah.
But it does not need to be mean-spirited.
Right.
I train at the gym and everybody would take a bullet for everybody, but you didn't get the shit beat out of you the first day you walked in there. Right. Like you had to prove yourself by getting your ass beat. Like, no, right. That you can have loyalty.
You
got to
go through the soap towel tunnel.
Right. Now there's fun things. Like when you go up a belt, everybody lines up, makes two lines, and then you run down and people whip you on the back with their belt or whatever.
Ooh.
Like, I mean, there is that. Or sometimes if it's your birthday, you get punched in the stomach by everybody. But what I'm saying is that.
So the hazing's later.
But the thing is, it's like. But
after they have your membership.
But everybody's got a big smile. Almost everybody has a big smile on their face. And
usually not the guy getting whipped.
Right.
Weird.
But the thing is that I think that it's interesting for a director. Like, it would be one thing if she was like, I went through hazing and it was awful and I'm just going to expose these fuckers. But it's the opposite. She's like, I did this and I kind of feel bad about it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to expose, like, how twisted it looks when you watch it.
Yeah.
And it does.
It's
looks
fucked up.
Yeah. And why would everybody – there's this great scene where the new rookies to the school have been gathered. And then it cuts to the scene of them all crawling up this incline. And you don't really know what's happening, but it's like, why would all of these people just get on their hands and knees because a group of douchebags told them to?
Right.
But they do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's, well, you know.
I mean, if everyone's signed up, then it's hard to tell a group like that no. I would try for sure.
Sure. But I guess that is the need to belong, which the thing of it is like, I don't understand why you don't go outside. I mean, theoretically, you should walk outside and see like a guy in like a chicken costume and a guy riding one of those big front wheel, like old timey, like bikes down the road. And you should see everybody.
A penny farthing.
Yes.
That's
right.
That's what they're called.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So you should see this stuff. You should see there should be individuality all over the place. But people dare not do that because it's about, I want to have an easy life. I want to be accepted. I want to be liked. But the thing is, if we were all just expressing ourselves, then everybody would get along just fine.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, ideally, but
yeah.
But so those are the themes that we're really exploring. So there is, however, some cannibalism in this movie.
A little bit.
So, how did you grapple with the idea that we have characters that we're supposed to feel something for, but not all? It's not like it's Angel on Buffy where he goes to the local butcher and gets like leftover bags of animal blood. Like,
yeah.
People are suffering in order for these people to eat. Did you feel a sympathy for them?
Not really. Because it's like, I mean, while I do think within the context of this movie, these things are literally happening, I also recognized it as this kind of coming of age allegory that could be sex. It could be anything that like I wasn't allowed to do before.
Yeah.
Her being a vegetarian is an important thing where it's like her parents have kept her away from meat her entire life on purpose.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that could be anything. It could be drugs. It could be drinking. It could be sex. It could be eating raw flesh.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, yes, obviously, if you take it literally where they are causing horrific motor accidents in order to eat the victims, like, yeah, that's pretty diabolical.
They pick a great street to do it on.
It's great. And it's
tree-lined.
It's set up so fucking well, man, because, yeah, as you said, that like that's kind of how it opens, is this car accident, but you have no, and it's a thing where you're like, did I miss something? Because
yeah, it's a zombie movie.
Because the first like four shots are, it's one shot, a person walking down. It's kind of a dusk, you know, it's dark-ish. They're walking down the road. Then we cut the other way. There's a car coming. Now we cut back. That person's no longer walking down the road. You're just like, okay. And you hear the car. And as the car approaches, then all of a sudden that person appears and runs into the road.
Yeah.
Causing the car to swerve. And then that person gets up, nice, slow, like, just relaxed, gets up and walks over to the car. And then credits, and now we're in a whole new thing. So you're just like, what the fuck? So then when that happens later in the movie,
yeah,
all that connects awesomely. And there's a cool moment where you kind of are like, oh, so was that a flashback or was that something... Like, I do think it was the sister, like, we're seeing the sister for the first time. But there is a part where that could be the Justine doing it.
Sure.
Because she learns it from Alex.
Well, and I'm glad that you brought that up.
That's definitely Alex.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's another thing that the director wanted the cannibalism to serve as a vessel for, which is like that, in this movie, it's like a sisterly connection.
Yeah.
Could just be any connection in general. The way that she described it was kind of vague, but I get what she's saying. She's like, imagine like you're in a red dress and you're in a sea of people dressed in blue. And then you see, you know, someone that you've known and they're wearing a red dress and you're like, I didn't know you were a red one. Like, I thought, I guess I didn't know you at all. Like, I didn't know you were like me. And so this cannibalism, strange as it sounds, really kind of creates this tight sisterly bond between two really opposite sisters. One is very rebellious. One is the golden child. And yet they have this hardcore thing that pulls them together.
Yeah.
So I think that is really neat. And what that explores is the idea that, yes, you can be individual, and yes, you can be different than people. Because I thought it was funny, she described the cannibalism as like a, like sort of a punk move. Like, my rebellion against society is to do something that's so abhorrent, just so awful, so rejected by society. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that, yes, you can go against the grain, but there are levels there.
Yeah.
That you can't, you know, go beyond. And her sister obviously goes beyond those levels. And so it's all about like, all the way, not skipping to the last scene, but the dad really illustrates it in the last scene where he says, I'm sure you'll figure it out. Where it's like, yeah, you can go to college and you can get fucking wasted and just survive within an inch of your life. You can't do that every day.
Right.
You can drink.
Yeah.
But you can't do that every single day. And so it's mining and navigating that minefield of, you know, the things that I want to do and I feel compelled to do, but I also have to watch out for myself.
Yeah.
That makes it really interesting. It's just really funny when someone picks cannibalism as the like vehicle.
Well, it makes for some powerful visual imagery. Like, right. If I was watching a movie about just a girl who went to school and started drinking and like was combating her,
you're like, oh,
hereditary alcoholism, I would have been like, been there, done that.
Right. Right.
But yeah, there's something, you know, fun about, and you know, there it's, yeah, it is so taboo. And when it comes up, like, you know, Armie Hammer, whatever his deal, like, do I think Armie Hammer is cutting the pieces off of people and like eating them? No. Well, it's probably some weird, I don't know how to express what I want to do to you sexually. So, you know, it's like, you've never like held a baby and been like, I'm going to eat you all up. I'm going to eat your toes, blah, blah, blah. Am I going to eat that baby?
No.
Yes, because I'm an atheist. But
right.
Yeah. Raw? Absolutely not. We always cook them.
Right. Yes. Oh God, that reminds me of a joke that's too terrible. I won't even say it on the air. But
oh, excellent.
So I'll tell you after. But yeah, no, you're exactly right. Like, and that's the, and I think that that's another element to the movie, which is to realize that about yourself, that there might be something about you that is so kind of left of center, that I guess as long as it's not hurting any non-consensual person, that you're fine. Like, I'll just give you a personal example. When I, in relation directly to this movie, there was a scene where, at one point the sister, Alex, not the big end scene, but a different scene where she had a real nice, as we call in the haunting world, a blood mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so like from underneath her nose all the way down over her mouth, into our lower jaw, she was covered in blood. And as
it's called a Van Dyke in the beard world. Kind
of, yes, exactly. Yeah. Like a bushy blood Van Dyke. And I'm looking at that, and there is something like extremely alluring to me about that. That is, I think it looks cool. And I also think that it's in like very attractive in a way.
Uh-huh.
And so that doesn't mean that I'm going to go out and start like punching people in the face till they start looking the way I want them to. But I like, there's something in me that feels drawn to that.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because I have to believe that with all the horror fans out there, I'm probably not the only one.
Sure.
That thinks that blood is fascinating. So that's kind of part of this movie too, is that, yeah, go to school, find yourself. Maybe you're going to surprise yourself because you thought you weren't into some stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then you get a little taste of it and all of a sudden you are.
Yeah.
And speaking of the taste, I do think they do a nice job with the gradualness of her cannibalism, that they don't, yeah. they don't just say like first, well, the first taste that she has of something raw, she's puking.
Yeah.
But it's animal.
I will say the meat escalation is pretty quickly, like just eating meat.
Yeah. Yes.
Is no, pretty quick, right. Especially to the raw chicken. Like that's in a day. Like she has the rabbit kidney, has some hives. Then the next day is like, she tries to steal a burger. Then they go to like a gas station to eat a kebab.
Yeah.
And then like the next morning she's eating raw chicken out of the fridge.
You know what's funny about that raw chicken scene?
It looked good, and I kind of wanted to do it.
Why do all of us kind of feel like we know exactly what that would feel and taste like? Like, none of us have done it, but we're watching her eat.
But yeah, it's a nice, plump chicken breast, yeah, so you're like, just like, oh,
I think
yeah.
I know exactly what that would be like. Yeah, it's very, very cool. And by the way, the movie does it so well that let's not take away from the fact that, I mean, CGI, I'm guessing somewhere, but not that I could really see easily. I mean, there's one scene at the end that is a really elevated level of deterioration of human tissue.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it was CGI or not. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It was so seamless on the leg,
yeah.
that it was like, maybe that was a practical effect, but it all looked
great. It looks great, yeah. It wasn't a point to where I was like...
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, I think they made a good choice there to not, there's not like blood splatter and like people freaking out. Like it's a lot more scavenger style,
mm-hmm.
When it's presented. So mostly. Now there is a really unique look to the movie. At first you might want to like think back on it and be like, is this one of those like blue movies where everything is, you know, is it desaturation?
Yeah.
But what the director said was that she wanted things to look warm and cool at the same time in the same frame.
Yeah.
So you get...
It looks kind of fluorescent.
Yes. So you'll get like a fluorescent, but then there'll be like the sun in the background. So there'll be like a warmth and the sort of sterile coldness okay. of it. So, and also a lot of like nice color usage between like blues and reds. It's funny, like this might be taking it a little, you know, directors get really creative with describing their movies after the fact.
Yeah.
But But she was talking about how, like, the messy room to her, like, represents, like, organs, like the inside of a body, how it's just all messy in there.
Okay.
I don't know if that really jumps out to a viewer.
No. But when I think of the body and its organs, seems pretty organized. Like, it's not like you cut someone open or like, now where's their stomach?
Good point. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of gross, but yeah. I think everything is pretty uniformly fit in there pretty consistently.
Yeah. Spoiler, not that hard to be a doctor, really. if you think about it. But no, I'm kidding. But no, that 70s photographer was David Hamilton. I'm sorry. It's just, it was buried in the notes. Who is that? He was that photographer that I couldn't think of his name.
Okay.
David Hamilton.
You found the name.
Yeah, we're past him now. But yeah, so she hates him. There's that.
Okay.
So now there's some good stuff with the camera.
Just
happening.
For his work? Is that what we're getting?
Yeah, I read an article. She's like, I hate that guy. Okay. Like just his stuff is so, it was so lauded. Like, how did he capture these images of beauty? But it's all super soft focus. Super staged, and it's just it looks like, it's like when you look on, you know, social media and you're like, just turn the fucking filter off already. Right. It's like that. So with the camera, she had four things that she wanted to do that really work on the forward tracking, the like slow forward tracking shot. She wanted to be when that is used, when something really means something, that it's either a moment of transition, acceptance, or maybe focus on our part. So the only shot that I really remember of that doesn't even necessarily really stand out, but it was at one of the many raves in this school. And Justine, maybe it was when she seemed the most relaxed. Remember, she was kind of sitting with her legs sort of spread.
Yeah.
And the camera's going through while someone is licking somebody's eyeball.
Yeah.
Licking the eyeball. Could you sit there and let somebody lick your eyeball?
Hmm. Maybe.
If you wear contacts,
that is what Nancy always, that's the phrase she uses for some weird thing where to not get sick, like, don't let anyone lick your eyeballs. Like, who's doing, did someone do that to you once?
Yeah. Yeah, what a,
she uses it all the time.
We need to go back.
She
has
a Southern mom, so she has said some wild things.
Right? Yeah, they eat eyeballs down there, so it makes perfect sense. Yeah, like that licking it is nothing to her. The other thing was the slow motion. Now, she described.
I do not remember slow motion in this movie.
So I'll kind of describe this. So her use, she says she looks at slow motion as being sort of like diving into the like a mass subconscious. And at first I'm like, well, what does she mean by that? But it makes sense. There's a scene in this movie where when they're on the bus to go get the shawarma,
mm-hmm.
and they drive past an accident.
Mm-hmm.
When you slow it down to slow motion,
oh, yeah.
you're sort of like everybody is in the same moment
mm-hmm.
as a viewer. On the screen. Now, if they had just gone by that accent in real time,
yeah.
well, you're looking at this ambulance guy and you're looking at this tree over
like
here.
Like in the Doors when Jim Morrison drives by that Indian family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Like it kind of like pulls everybody into the same mood, mode, tone, vibe, visual.
Okay, I forgot about that part.
I thought it was pretty
neat. I think it's like a movie like this. I think almost subconsciously, I just expect artistic choices like that. So they don't have the impact where I'm just like, ah, yes.
Well, no, that's a great point because, yeah, it's not like a look what I did here. Mm. Like it's just all seamlessly.
Yeah.
Going
like if fucking Madman all of a sudden had a scene like that, I'd be like, how about that fucking slow-mo bus crash? You know?
Right. Now, here's another thing. Here, everybody can sound real smart to their friends at the bar this weekend. If you want to cite a camera setup called a shot reverse shot, which means that there's a scene where it's where Justine is probably first feeling physical sexual urges towards her roommate,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a fascinating character, by the way. We'll get to Adrian.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed his character. But shot reverse shot means that the camera is first looking at what a person It's a shot on somebody observing something. And then it flips to the shot of what they're observing, but from the opposite angle. So you're looking directly at Justine's face, and then the camera spins around at a 180, and we're looking at what she's looking. It sounds very simple.
Yeah.
But then we go back, and then we see her reaction to what's being seen. So it's sort of feeding the audience her, like, digestion of what she's watching.
Yeah.
It's used a lot, but, I mean, it's done really well in this because – she's very still and kind of freaky looking.
Uh-huh.
And you're watching Adrian, her roommate, like play a game of soccer, and he's really active and his shirt's off and guys are fighting and arguing and playing sports. So that's kind of like life. And she's just like frozen death on this guy. And it's pretty effective. It's really cool. And the last one is just looking directly at the camera, breaking the fourth wall, which apparently happens 4 times in this movie.
This is another thing. I'm just like, didn't notice that at all.
The only one that jumped out at me, and what she wanted that for, she didn't want to just break it for no good reason. She wanted it to break when the audience was like an accomplice.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like it you can create intimacy in a scene. But if an actor is looking at the camera, it's like, I see you. I see you watching me. Used to great, probably the best use of it is when she's having sex with Adrian. And it's sort of implied that she's reaching orgasm. And she's biting her own arm.
Yeah,
she does avoid biting him.
Yeah.
And then she is sort of peering over, like almost Dracula style, peering over her forearm at the camera while the blood drips down her forearm. And she's looking at us, watch her have sex and bite herself till she bleeds. And she's like, what do you think about that?
Right.
Which is pretty cool.
You liked that as much as I did.
Right,
I know
exactly.
You did. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, you're enjoying this, aren't you? And so, I thought that was really neat. And I always think that that's really cool when a director is like, this is the difference between shit film and good film, where a director is like, this is something I want to try. We're going to aim for this goal and we're going to execute it. So some really, really cool stuff there. And also, it's not only used as an accomplice, it's also used when she's asking for help. There's a scene that we end up seeing in greater detail where she's pulled by her sister through a party into, like you said, wide open usage of the facilities here on this campus, into the morgue where there are dead bodies. And Justine is being...
And why are there dead humans at this veterinarian school?
Oh, God, that's a good question. I didn't even think about that. Wow. Yeah.
And these are just like, I didn't think that when I watched it. I literally just thought that. But this movie is one of those, again, where I'm not like, I'm not worried about how much logical sense anything makes.
I guess in the beginning, like when they're pulling up to the school, they say like, oh, there's the medical facility and there's the, like they kind of talk about a few different things by each other. I don't know. We didn't see the cadavers from the waist down. Maybe they were still on the horse unit, but anyhow, so as Justine is being pulled through the crowd, she actually looks back at directly at the camera. And that is like, that is looking for help.
Yeah.
Which I, as just a very quick tangent here, instead of just blathering on about myself, what is your connection as an actor to looking at the audience while you're on stage? Do you like doing that?
I don't mind it. It's funny because that is a thing, like, I think when people think about maybe just like a stereotype thing, like the Shakespearean monologue, as a guy stands there and does it to the crowd. But I got tamped down on that real early. Like, it was seventh grade. I was in, I remember this. I was in A Christmas Story or A Christmas Carol.
Uh-huh.
I was young Scrooge. when working at Fizzywigs or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's the scene where I'm talking to the, you know, like essentially breaking up with my girlfriend, and this little bit, I like turn out and start saying it. And they're like, what are you doing? Why are you looking at us? And I was like, oh, right. And I turned back to the girl and I was like, I mean, it shook me. I was like, oh, I fucked up. But in retrospect, I was like, great directing to yell at a fucking seventh grader like that. Be like, why are you doing that? Why would you do that? So I've always been very self-conscious about it. And I can't say I've really, I mean, unless it's needed, I don't try and like cheat that in.
Well, yeah.
Because people will try and do that.
It's funny.
No one specifically, but people do.
It's funny that
you don't do that. You don't do that.
It's funny that you use that word, because there's a difference between cheating out, which just means that you're positioning yourself so that the audience can get a fuller, you know, a visual.
Yeah, if we're having a conversation, we will naturally square up our shoulders. But right. On stage, that looks dumb. So you have to
cheat out
you my belly.
Right. Now, I've had the good luxury of being in a lot of shows where I have had a lot of monologues with the audience.
Yeah.
I enjoy looking at the audience. And I really, that's why that part really affected me, because there have been, like I've talked about on the show, and I won't go into it in detail, but there have been a lot of times where with emotional scenes in a show dealing with the audience, it's a really sort of cheap and I guess kind of manipulative therapy to like dump on the audience a little bit emotionally and look at them and be pouring all this stuff out. And it's funny the reactions that you get. You know, some people can't handle it and they'll look away. I've seen some people with like their hands over their mouths and like these, like this, like they just can't handle what's happening on stage. So I think that's really interesting. And I just like the fact that a director made a decision to do that, because that's the kind of great anecdotal stuff that you love hearing, like Scorsese talk about or Spielberg, like these planned little moments that meant something. Maybe on your first viewing, you don't catch it, but it's cool to know that that's in there.
Yeah.
And it made me think about something today. This is a great question, I think. I'm going to pat myself on the back. If you were a filmmaker, would you make a film for audiences? Are you making your film for their first viewing, or are you making your film for their second
viewing? Ooh. I mean,
because think about that opening shot.
Yeah.
That opening shot, we don't know what's going on. If they only see your movie one time, I guess they get to the end of the movie and they know, oh, that's if they remember.
Yeah. Halfway through.
But I mean, but there are some movies where you see it a second time and you're like, oh, fuck, I had no idea. But then, and now you're no stranger to multiple viewings of films.
No.
But I'm going to piss real quick. I want you to speak. But yeah, because that's your... probably the absolute best person to talk about multiple viewings in a movie.
So, I do love a movie. Go pee.
So is its merit only on that first viewing, or is there merit in building in stuff for the multiple viewing?
Right. I mean, I do love a movie where it means something more or something new on a repeat viewing because of the information you now have, like a Fight Club. Fight Club is a great example of that. To take that extra step does, you know, the ones that really work are the ones where the director has built in, you know, little hints, and where you go back and you're like, oh my God, how did I not even realize that? I mean, there is a part in Bo is Afraid where they're on the cruise ship. And I saw one guy make a Reddit post 2 months after that fucking movie had come out and been like, anyone notice this creeper on the cruise ship? And then you watch that scene again. You're like, he just walks through a full frame. But but for 2 months, not that movie was popular, but it did have a very dedicated, you know, group of people who liked to watch it again and theorize things about it. So for no one to fucking catch that for 2 months and it to be so obvious and blatant now where you watch it to where you're like now when I watch it with people, I wait for them to go, what's up with this fucking guy creeping around? Because you're like, how do you miss that?
Right. But how would you?
So
okay,
I.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah. So if I was good to make a movie, yes, of course, I would want to make a movie like that because I like. You know, yes, movies can be fun and just kind of dumb. You know, I like a Transformers as much as the next guy. Only the first one, though. The rest are crap. But, yeah, you know, I like art taking that extra step and to make you maybe think about it and then come up with your own shit. And as you watch it again, then what did the director mean or things like that. So, yeah, watching this movie, I don't know if I would get much out of it a second time. Like, I don't think this movie is a movie where you're like, oh, now that I understand everything, there might be different context going on. I mean, maybe some shit with the sister at the beginning, but I don't feel like there's any like where you go back and go, oh, now that weird scene where I was like, what does that mean? Now I totally understand what was going on.
Sure.
Because it's pretty blatant with the sister. I mean, because she just, from the point where, because she cuts off her finger accidentally, passes out from the shock of it, wakes up to see Justine nibbling on her finger.
Yes.
To then, yeah, where we're at the car accident part where, this is the only part where in retrospect, you're like, okay, now I understand the beginning of the movie was Alex. She also has this craving for flesh.
Yeah.
But even at the beginning of the first, you know, time through where she takes her sister, cause they're just kind of laying in the ditch and I don't think they've shown the road yet. So then when the car is coming down and she runs out, there is a little reminiscent of the beginning. But it's not until she like goes up to the car and starts licking this guy's head wound where you're like, oh, okay, this is a much deeper thing.
It's basic. Than
this is not a special. This is not a special thing. The girl that Justine's going through.
Yeah, it's basically like a hardcore version of in Teen Wolf when his dad is standing outside of the bathroom. Scott, open this door right now, like. It's basically that.
Yeah, her licking the head is him opening the bathroom door and yes. Him standing there.
Yes, exactly.
That's hilarious, dude.
Brian De Palma's like, I know what my motherfucking next split screen is. But yeah, so yeah, there is that. And you know, the funny thing is with that sisterly stuff, like I like how you mentioned when they're down in the ditch first, because even if you saw this movie and you saw that first scene, when her sister runs out, her sister is such a troubled character that you're wondering, like, did she just kill herself?
Right.
Like, it's really effective. But that's not the only, like, sisterly scene. There is a great scene where they are getting drunk together on, like, a rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex is showing her how to piss standing up. Yes. As a woman. And Justine fails miserably at it and falls down and does, like, this very real line of just saying, like, I'm still pissing.
Yeah, still pissing.
Like, I was laughing at
that. And
it
is funny
scene.
How she's like, this is gross.
I was.
Anyway, can I eat your spleen?
Right, exactly. I love that she said that she tastes like curry.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the good stuff. Like there's some really nice, real, like very real connections there. And I mentioned Adrian, the roommate. So this is really interesting. When Justine gets to the school for the first time, she's wound up pretty tight.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she has this male roommate and she's like, well, I requested a woman. And he says, well, they gave you a gay man.
Yeah.
So then she is like kind
they
of,
don't seem to care.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like what I really enjoyed about that was that sometimes when you're thrust into those environments, like have you ever been in a show before where like two people that never knew each other prior to being cast, you're like you get about like 3 weeks into rehearsal and they're like best friends.
Yeah.
And so you see that in these like kind of forced environments where I really like normally if you were watching a movie and you said, well, these two people just met 2 months ago. Would they really like get out of the shower and like crawl in bed with that person and like snuggle with them? Well, maybe probably not, but maybe in this environment you would.
Yeah.
You know, and even if it does seem unrealistic, you're kind of everything is ramped up. Your relationships are ramped up. Like the need for a connection is ramped up. So I thought, I found that stuff really endearing. And I think it was really great that they, because there are still people out there that would be like, well, if there is a gay man, he has never had sex with a woman in his entire life. Right. I think most people would be surprised that a lot of gay men have had a lot of heterosexual sex.
Yeah.
And so
a lot of them were just told that's what they're supposed to do.
Sure. And that again, so Adrian becomes another version of exactly what this movie is about.
Yep.
Like, and he has that great, well, I mean, it's tragic, but that great scene where after they've had sex and she's kind of warming up to him and he's being distant and going through something internally and stands up in the middle of class and kicks the chair and says, you know, I didn't hide for 20 years to start fucking women now.
Yeah.
You know, and he's mad at himself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's something really powerful there where you're just like, this movie is just about people kind of figuring themselves out, you know, and making some mistakes along the way.
Yeah.
Hopefully learning from them, and hopefully the mistakes aren't too big. Some are. So I know that I've never seen a prop earlier in a movie and like totally forgot about it and then have it have such an impact later on in the film.
Oh,
the ski pole.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in a sec. But no, I just back to that for 2 seconds, that making a film for the first viewing or second viewing. The interesting thing is, I think a lot of that has to do with our society now. Because if you were making a film in the 70s, you'd only make it for the first viewing because that's all people are going to go see.
Yeah.
Maybe you get on TV, but that doesn't mean that you don't have a talented enough director to get it right from the beginning. Like if you go to any film class, they'll show that one scene from Jaws.
That's a good point. Yeah.
They'll show that scene from Jaws on the beach talking with between the three guys, Scheider and Dreyfuss and the mayor.
And Mr. Vaughn.
And what's happening is in the background where Spielberg knew exactly what he was doing with his framing and when to include like the screaming girl graffiti with the shark behind them, depending on what dialogue is being spoken.
Yeah.
So a really talented director is already smart enough to work that stuff in, even if maybe people weren't consciously feeling it. But nowadays, if you were a director and all you have to do is look through Facebook and read somebody say like, well, I'm starting The Office for the 10th time. And it's like, well, fuck, I'm going to make my movies that way then. If people are watching it 10 times, right. I'm going to put all of it in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what was like the first movie where it was like, oh, shit, when you watch this a second time, it's a totally different thing.
Clue. But that was just endings.
I mean, yeah, that was just different endings.
But no, but I mean, but I think like like just catching things, picking up on things, there being like hidden things in there. Yeah, like just the concept of Easter eggs.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a relatively new thing, like at least like 20, no older than 20 years.
Yeah.
So the idea of putting in those little homages and things, which is cool. But now people watch it over and over and can. So why wouldn't you throw everything in with in the kitchen sink?
Right.
I love those.
Yeah. Well, that's what, yeah. I mean, you get more bang for your buck that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Too bad we'll never do The Sixth Sense. That's a pretty good one of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well.
You're right. Now, that, and you know what? And the tragedy of it is that I've only seen that movie once.
Oh, for real?
So I was looking forward to like watching it. Well, I only watched it once and it got fucking ruined because whatever the idiot savant that I was watching it with knew it in 20 seconds.
Jeez.
And this was before like just said it out loud and I'm like, oh, yeah, probably.
Oh.
And so it just ruined the whole rest of the movie.
I love how you're like still tiptoeing around what it is. It's been out for 25 years. You're like,
right.
I'm not going to say, though, but this got ruined.
Well, we're not supposed to talk about it.
Yeah, we can't talk about it anyway.
That's right.
On to this movie.
So, but no, just real quick if you haven't picked up on it already, I'm sure we've said it somewhere along the way. This movie is in French.
Yes.
And the subtitles are great. I've watched some Japanese movies with subtitles, modern Japanese movies, and you can just tell by the quality of subtitle that's like, I'm not hearing what they're saying.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, I'm not getting the story here.
Yeah. But, yeah, I try, because I know a little French, so I'll try and pick stuff out. But yeah, even some like little sentences, I'm just like, that seems like too many words for that.
Right. But as a casual viewer, I think you're getting the nuance of the movie, though. And it's really well acted on top of that. Like we mentioned, really great makeup. Even before we get into the hardcore stuff, there's a scene early on, or a couple scenes, where Justine has a really nasty rash.
Yeah.
And when she is scratching that rash, every person that watches that knows the exact feeling of both the rash and the pleasure and the pain. Mm-hmm. It looks so good. Her reaction to it is the reaction that you have when you look down, and like, it starts with a couple spots, and then you just like, it's like your mind isn't accepting everything that's happening on your chest or whatever. And then all of a sudden it does. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, they do a nice aha moment with that. Great little scene too, where she goes to a clinic with a nurse that a lot of people smoke in this, but I'm given to understand
French,
it's a French
yeah.
smoke. So we get a really nice scene where, again, it's
do they still smoke in their medical facilities
do.
Though? Like, yeah, why not? They have to.
Yeah, there's no sense.
Legally, I'm obligated to have a
good
cigarette.
Cultural stereotype. I mean, why ruin it? Yeah. But
the wheel of cheese was too much.
Right. But
Dutch cheese, though.
Yes, right. Yeah. It's a cheese country.
It is.
So the
second biggest exporter outside Germany.
Yeah, that's what we've. Yeah, and we all and everybody knows exactly where these countries are. In this scene, though, this nurse has a nice little monologue about an obese girl that was talking about, like, the shame of being obese and wanting to be like everybody else. If you really, like, think about this movie, she's shoving it, so to speak, down your throat, that the concept is about conformity and the need for conformity and fighting it, but having the wherewithal to do that and to question yourself while you're fighting it. Like, am I the wrong one? 'Cause I'm not like everybody else. Really good questions for a lot of different types of people, not just people that wear funny outfits, but like, you know, our character, like Adrian, I'm sure that there are a lot of gay people that grow up and question themselves, even though they might know things in their heart, but to say like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody else is right. Maybe I haven't figured it out yet or whatever.
I just recently learned, I really like the song My Hero by the Foo Fighters. I learned no one likes that song. It's crazy.
You know what? It's, I have a...
no one likes drums? Come on.
Right. No, it's actually... you know what's the best part about that song is I like the verses, that sort of like driving, like kind of droning guitar. No, that's a good song.
I like the idea of his hero's just an ordinary guy.
Yeah.
I think it sends a really positive message.
Right. It does. We could all learn a lot from My Hero by Foo Fighters if you haven't heard it. I did recently.
Also, I learned earlier this year, I'm not as big a Foo Fighters fan as I thought I was. I saw them live. I was like, I don't know any of these fucking songs, and they're not good.
It was tough for me because I was such a Nirvana fan, and obviously the Foo Fighters, like, their real hook is melody. Mm. And now, granted, I will say that about any Foo Fighters song that I hear, I can name about three other songs that sound alarmingly like that song. Okay. But that's fine. He's a fan and that's okay. But it's hard to not like Dave Grohl.
Exactly.
I mean, he seems like the most down to earth, likable dude.
He does talk a lot during a show about how great being at a Foo Fighters show is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He can ease back on that a little bit.
Yeah, ease back.
You know, one of the most fun, it wasn't even stage banter. I was at an REM concert, and it was in the last song, End of the World as We Know It. And Michael Stipe was not in a smug or like shitty way, but I could tell, like, he just kind of was kneeling down, like doing that sort of like Eastern European, like crouch that you do for photos. and in that country. And like everybody just kind of crouches down in their tracksuits. But he's doing the crouch and he's just like kind of just looking around. And you could sense him just kind of like taking in the moment.
Mm.
And I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
Like I like it, you know. Yeah, we don't need a lot of rehearsed banter from these guys.
No.
Yeah.
He says motherfucker a lot too.
Oh yeah.
No one talks like Eddie Vedder though. Holy shit. Shut the fuck up, man. It's like I agree with you and you're changing my mind because you won't shut the fuck up.
Can you just do the thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's that. Where are we at for time?
We're okay. We can still talk here.
So there is a really, really funny and powerful scene. I wouldn't call it the climax of the movie, but it's a sort of like penultimate climax where we get a fight scene between the two sisters. And it starts out as a little bit funny. Justine has seen some video footage that Adrian, her roommate, showed her of when Justine was very, very drunk and her sister was basically teasing her with the cadavers and everybody was watching.
She's like, she looks like a dog. She's like on all fours trying to bite at the hand that can't feed her.
Right. Yes. Could feed her.
She wants it. Yeah.
Right. But Alex is making sure that it can't feed her. And so we get this this fight scene where Justine kind of like in what we'll just call it the commons, like runs and like some really good, like realistic tackles.
Oh yeah, dude.
It's the choreography is great. And
they are realistic. Like it is a good realistic fight because it's like when you watch a movie fight and then you watch like something someone taped outside a bar.
Yeah.
Taped.
Yeah.
You know, where you're just like, oh, there is no style to these fights at all. Like it's kind of that. It's a little rumbly.
Yeah.
Good rumbly fight.
Yeah. If you ever think that people that box or do MMA are just in there trying to, like it's human cockfighting or just trying to take each other's heads off, watch an amateur fight and then you'll see the difference in the skill. But no, you're right. Like, and even it's like the stuff that you would want to do. Like if you were pissed at somebody and they didn't know that you were coming, you'd want to just fucking blast them. Like just a double handed push and shove them 6 feet across the pavement.
Neck whip.
Yeah. And she gets it and it looks good. So then they start fighting and it's really kind of funny at first. And then it becomes really sad because they become such a spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
It's again, it's kind of like the scene in Teen Wolf where he freaks out at the dance and like now all of a sudden he's, you know, sort of seen as an animal. A lot of correlation there.
I did not realize.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah, I guess she went out for the play, I should have realized this is just Teen Wolf.
Yes. Just Teen Wolf? Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah, she had it.
Check
all
out our website, slumberpodcastmassacre.com.
Leave on a high note. But yeah. So anyway, but the fight like devolves into them just sort of locking on each other to where as you're watching it, like you're like, don't do this in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. Like everybody's gonna know, and you feel so bad. The thing that was rushing through my mind as I was seeing that is just how one thing can happen in a high schooler or middle schooler, probably college person's life that just unfortunately could define them for the rest of their existence there. And I was really feeling a lot of sympathy for them. And then when they were being sort of held back from each other, they were like fighting dogs, like now both on all fours. And you really felt sympathy for them because they had sort of fallen victim to their, I don't want to call it addiction, but their appetites.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like it's so public, and at that point, while it's not like you know, no one is like teasing her, like oh, there's the cannibal girl or whatever. But you already feel like this. Everyone knows, the video helps of her trying to bite at it.
Yeah.
And that just kind of seems to add on to where everyone's like, even if they don't know for sure. Yeah. She's like, she's the flesh eater or whatever. The weirdo flesh. Because she is constantly worried about, am I weird?
Right.
Anyway. So just by worrying about it, she gives off that vibe anyway.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I love, yeah, the fight. Because, yeah, you do. You feel bad because it's like you don't want them to get there to where they are biting each other.
Right.
Because it's like that's what everyone expects them to do.
Well,
and then when they do it, it's like this collective, like almost a like when you watch two fucking drunk people who obviously have a problem. But you're like, I'm not going to solve that guy's problem.
No.
But what a surprise. They're drunk fighting right now or right. something, you know.
Well, and that kind of brings up, I don't even know if I'd really call it like a subtext of the movie, but it's no coincidence that they're at a veterinary school. And in the beginning, you have this like super typical college conversation at the lunch table mm-hmm. where it's like, we're in college now, so we're going to like argue like really heady like viewpoints and ideas, and I'm going to throw concepts at you that make you really think about stuff, which is probably very healthy in retrospect. But that's what you're there for. You're there to learn. But they start. But in this conversation about the origin of AIDS at this lunch table that takes place, you have Justine saying that, you know, because there was always that thing about somebody had sex with a monkey.
Right.
And that's where AIDS started. And she was saying that qualifies as rape. And people are saying, oh, so you're saying that a woman that gets raped is the equivalent of like a monkey getting raped. And she's like, yeah, like, what are we here for? Like, we're here to help animals.
Right.
Like, how do you not see? Like, why am I wrong?
Right.
You know? And so I think that
because the monkey can't say no.
Right.
Does not mean.
So I think that I think that it's not the main message of the movie, but I think that there is something of a realization that, yeah, people are like animals and there is pack behavior. And if you're outside of that, then you're shunned. And so it all kind of rolls into that conformity thing. And how do you navigate that? So that at the end of the film, when we've already had the shocker of Justine and her sister both having this appetite.
Mm-hmm.
That then we learn that they actually inherited it from their mother.
Yeah.
And their father, who not really noticeable until this point at the dinner table.
The reveal is so good.
Yeah. But their father.
Well, we shouldn't really skip over Adrian, though.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's.
Because how we get to the end part is. Yeah, this is after their fight.
Yeah.
And then, Justine kind of goes and gets in bed with Adrian, right? For a little comfort time. They don't have sex. They only do it the one time.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's a great scene. We don't have a zoom in. This is a great pull back.
Yeah.
A very slow reveal as she wakes up. She's a little bloody. She's like, oh my God, you know, what have I done? The sheet comes off, his fucking thigh is like missing. And so it's a great moment of her being like, what have I done? Like, I'm so far gone. I don't even remember doing this.
Right.
And just the where she's like, you wake up and then the blood starts spilling out of his mouth as she shakes him and you're like, oh, that guy's done.
And I start like rifling through my medical knowledge, like, okay, is he dead? But right, it's like if your leg looks like a sort of like primitive tent frame before they put the animal skin on, right. Like you're fucked. Like there's arteries in there that you don't want to mess with.
But it's not until she gets up and notices like a puncture wound in his back.
Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck is that?
What the fuck is that? And then she like looks around the corner and her sister's like sitting there. I don't remember who has the ski pole or
sees it on the ground first.
Okay.
Picks up the ski pole.
Yes. And it's like, oh, this matches up.
Right. And then goes
now,
over.
Would that kill a guy? Like, this is the.
Well, I suppose because at first she's saying, because you're right, it's the scene is amazing because you're right. Justine thinks like, well, she's saying, why didn't you stop me? Why didn't you fight right. back? She's talking to essentially a dead Adrian or on his last legs, so to speak. But she is saying, like, why didn't you fight back? And you as the audience member are like, yeah, why didn't he?
Right.
And, you know, even if he felt really sorry for her, he didn't feel that sorry for her.
Yeah.
Nobody would. But now there's that, you're right, there's a puncture wound. So you might know this better than me. I've done very little skiing. Uh-huh. How long is that point at the end of a ski pole?
Yeah, like three inches.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, could it puncture a lung? Could you puncture the heart through the back?
But you would think he would fight back through that. I don't know. Maybe he was drugged. Again, not really important.
Yeah, either way. Yeah, either way he died.
Yeah.
But when she sees her sister, who... boy.
With some blood mouth.
She got the blood mouth, but it's not really the sexy kind because she has such a vacant look in her eye that it is very unsettling. It's sort of sad and creepy.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, she just really full. Because a lot of that leg is gone, man. She ate a lot of fucking leg.
Good point.
So it is just like, is she just sitting there in like a comatose, like, oh my God.
Oh God, I didn't even think
about it.
I mean, it's
a mixture of all of that, I'm sure.
No, but you're right, though.
Because she does, looks very vacant and has like no reactions. Yeah, Justine takes, I love she takes the, because at this point in the movie, she takes the ski pole and just puts it up against Alex's forehead. And at this point, I'm just like, I fully expect her to just go pop, that thing into her skull. But she doesn't. And then it's like this weird kind of ending where she just goes to jail.
Well, yeah, but there's a nice sisterly moment where she picks her up.
Oh,
she
cleans her off,
shower. Yes. And this is sometimes what happens in, I think some people listening to this right now, this might resonate with them, that sibling dynamics can change over time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that older sibling is the older sibling for a long, long time. But we're all human. And sometimes those older siblings might struggle and that younger sibling is going to step up and be there for that older one and say, you might have made my life hell, but you're still my brother or my sister, and I'm going to take care of you.
Tell me about it.
it's a very, very nice, it's very, very affecting scene. And it's a testament to this movie to take such a gory topic and make it that touching, but it really is that.
Yeah.
And then you're right. So then, but what are you expecting? You're expecting like they're going to get rid of the body. They're going to like everybody's outside. Everybody's doing the hazing thing. They're the end of the hazing is upon them.
Yeah.
Everybody's gone. You could get rid of the body.
And am I wrong? Or they say the hazing takes a week or is it a month?
I don't know, but it's felt like longer than a week.
I know. Okay.
But I mean, it's a while, but what's great is that you're expecting like some sort of happy ending here, but
no, right. It is a week long hazing ritual. This movie, that's what I thought.
Oh,
this movie takes place in a week.
Wow.
a lot happens in a week here.
I guess so. What's the second week at school like?
It's very relaxed.
So, so then all of a sudden we see the next scene is the family, the Justine, her mom and her dad visiting Alex in prison.
Yeah.
And you're like, and that's, I'm so glad they did that because it brings it full circle. It's saying, yes, you might need to find out who you are. And yes, maybe you're a different kind of person. And yes, you may need to navigate how you're going to sort that out in your everyday life. But there are limits.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just say like, hey, I want to be a free spirit. I want to live free. I don't want to play into the, you know, corporate society. I'm just going to rob banks. Well, yeah, you can, but you can also go to jail for that. Yeah. You know, there has to be, it's about, the movie isn't necessarily about this immediate right decision in this moment or that immediate right decision. It's about saying, you got to feel some of this shit out.
Yeah.
And hopefully you do it before it gets too bad. And unfortunately for Alex, yeah, she was just kind of doomed that way. But it was the sweetest, sweetest thing because it's a prison scene where Alex is on the other side of the glass. And as the family is leaving, she puts up both of her middle fingers, one of which is missing, that her sister ate. And Justine does the best thing where she goes up and she puts her wound up against
the cheek that Alex has bitten in the fight.
So it's kind of like
gross and scarred. And yeah, she puts that up.
So it's almost as if their injuries and their hardships have brought them together.
Yeah.
That it's a shared experience there.
Yeah.
And then we get our last scene.
Yeah.
With this wonderful dad, by the way.
Dude, yeah. And the whole reveal, like, I just was completely taken off guard, did not see it coming. Especially the bit, because yeah, the mom is really upset. They're having lunch or whatever, and she leaves, and he tries to tell Justine, he's like, this isn't your fault, you know. And you think, like, because your sister's in jail, it's not your fault, yeah. Like, whatever. And she's like, yeah, I understand that, Dad, I know. And it's not until he's like, it's not your sister's fault either. She's yeah. like, are you sure? Because she killed and ate a guy. Right. So it might be. And then he starts talking about the first time they, you know, he met his wife and she didn't want to like date him. And he's like kind of like, you know, talking and rubbing his mouth. Now he kind of has that hair lip surgery
it looks
anyway.
Like that.
Yeah.
But if you notice, that's the same thing where the guy's missing the lip when Justine bites him.
Well, exactly. Well, yeah. And then, so then there's another because we kind of touched on it a little bit where there's another hazing party where she goes to, she walks in, she gets yellow paint dumped on her,
which is hysterical. Hits her right in the face.
Right in the face. Yeah.
It's like, kind of funny.
Again, one of these things, everyone else seems to know what's going on except for her. Yeah. And then they're like, you're in green paint. You have blue paint. You two go in that fucking room. Don't come out till you're both green, which is that's a fun spin the bottle.
Yeah.
Modern take on a spin the bottle.
Sure.
Game. And so, yes, while they're making out, she fucking takes a chunk out of his lip.
Yes.
And when he comes out, yeah, he's got a big fucking chunk right in the middle of his top lip.
Right.
So as the dad's telling the story and he's like, I didn't really understand. And now we're getting a close up on the dad. He's like, I didn't really understand it until the first time she kissed me. And just hearing kissed me, you go, oh, look at his lip. Oh, my God. That looks just like when she kissed the guy earlier. And he's like, it's just the fucking best reveal where he's like, you know, I know you'll like figure something out as he's like unbuttoning his shirt and just opens his shirt. And it is just his whole chest. It's just fucking gnarled hamburger.
Yes.
And lacerations and bites. And so,
and you're
and
like,
he's just like, like kind of shrugs, like you got to figure it out.
And you're like, are those like old bites, new bites? Right. Is this still going on? You know, and he has it. And I wish I would have written it down because it's a very, very sweet way of putting it. But you're right. When he talks about that first kiss, he's like, you know, we had our first kiss and I understood.
Yeah.
And so basically, like, I knew what was going on with your mom and I loved her anyway. And married her anyway. And it also brings it back. Now, this isn't to say that it has to do specifically with women, but obviously we know that it passed from the mom down. Outside of the hospital, there's this kind of throwaway line where he says, don't have two daughters. It's too much. And if it's just a daughter thing, then it's like, yeah. So that's a good
I mean, maybe in the way of where that now you can go back to things make sense.
But
I mean, there's nothing drastic. But yeah, at the beginning of the movie, when we're first introduced to Justine and she just gets some mashed potatoes, and there's like a little piece of sausage in it. And the mom flips the fuck out. Yeah. She's like, you didn't eat it, did you? And she's like, no. I didn't even bite it. I just knew it was in there. And she's like, why are you giving this to her? She is a vegetarian. Like, she will not eat meat.
Right.
Now that makes sense. It's the protective parent, like, I do not want this happening to my child.
Well, and the fact that there's no playbook. Like, how do you, as a parent, sit down your kid and be like, we're kind of like bloodthirsty cannibals that we can't control our notions and our desires. So you can't say that. You're just like, well, I'm going to keep you away from the thing that could make you bad.
Yeah.
But you can't do that forever. And then when you do encounter that, you've got to figure it out for yourself. And that's kind of what the whole movie is about. Just like you got to, you know, life has its ups and downs and you just got to sort your way through.
Yeah. My kid's getting there. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
She's dreading it.
Oh, the college, you mean?
Oh, yeah, just about, yeah. Like, you're going to have to just start doing your own shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will not plan my day around you anymore.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll admit it. I like to sing my praises as a father because I feel like especially from what I've heard, that how dismissive some fathers can be. Mm-hmm. I know that I have had a world of fun with my girls all through their lives, and I take a lot of pride in that. But I'll tell you, I haven't been the best at bringing the hammer down. I suck at that. I'll admit it. I'm awful at it, but they're good girls and they don't give me a lot of reason to do it anyway. So that's great.
Yeah. That's the problem with my youngest. It's like one time a doctor asked her, like, what happens when you get grounded? And she's like, nothing.
Yeah. Like, right.
If she ever did anything to ground her for, I would look forward to that.
It's like in 40-year-old Virgin where he's talking about like feeling boobs, but he describes like a bag of sand. Obviously you've never felt boobs before. Like ground, like I have to do farm work. Right. Something. I don't know. But it is tough. It is tough to be a parent. It is tough to be a disciplinarian. The funny thing is I don't think this movie is trying to say like this is the way or that's the way. That shit's a little crazy and it's not, you know, easily navigated. You just got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And hopefully you don't go to jail.
Yeah. Find a way to do your crazy thing that doesn't hurt anyone else.
Right.
That's the best thing.
Yeah.
No one cares if you do crazy shit.
Right.
That's when you start hurting other people with your crazy shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Some good lessons in there. Yeah. Now, you and I talked earlier before we started the show about what I think is a really important thing for this podcast and the listeners and viewers and all that stuff, is that if you are somebody that is really grossed out and freaked out by gore, yeah, this movie has some stuff that's probably really going to turn some stomachs. Yep. If nothing else, just yet another example of somebody pulling the longest hairball in the world out of their mouth. That was probably the hardest one for me.
It is like a David Copperfield show.
Yeah, it is.
How much hair is in there? I mean, that felt like it was overdone on purpose
because it's a
absurd
watching it.
Yeah.
And so,
and it's the it's not even like, oh, like a lot of hair comes out. It's just the length of the strand, but it's a lot of hair.
Right.
It's so gross.
So the thing is, like, I get it. And it's not my place to argue somebody like, oh, you should get over it or, you know, don't be a wimp or whatever. But here's the thing, though. Love it or hate it, a lot of some of the best cinema that's happening right now is happening in horror films. And there's no getting around it. This is an incredibly well-made, awesome movie.
Yeah.
That people that are just big fans of great film, especially that has like a little bit of that independent vibe, a little bit of that ultra naturalistic feel to it, would love this movie.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And she's an exciting filmmaker because her next movie seemed to do even to Tane about fucking a car.
Yeah, you've been talking about that movie for a while.
My buddy Ryan has been telling me to see it. I almost saw it. I saw Lamb instead. I regret it to this day. Not that I didn't like Lamb, but I would, in retrospect, now knowing about what Lamb really was, wish I'd seen to Tane.
Well, hey, we're at the end of Evil Dies Tonight. So we've got the freedom to work some of that in now.
Yeah, that's funny. We have obviously something planned for next week, but we've gone so long without having to plan anything. Yeah. We don't have anything planned. I have to break out a new list or something. What if we got like a list and then like rolled a die? No.
Right, exactly. No, we just need we need the Price is Right wheel to spin.
Real quick tangent, just on that. I saw the funniest thing. I just walked in to like our living room that was on. And so I watched just a few seconds of the wheel spin, right?
Yeah.
It was this very small lady. So she could not spin it around, right? She finally got it all the way around. And Drew was just like, okay, yeah, just go stand over there. So then like the next girl comes up, very excited. And he's like, you have to beat 55. She's like, what? And he goes, you have to beat 55. She's like, okay, how do I do that? And he's like, just spin the wheel. So she's like, okay, she spins it. And he's like, you know, do you want to say hi to anyone? So I'm watching this wheel. She also spins it super weak, right?
Yeah.
So to where it barely gets back around, to where it hits the peg, to where it goes all the way around. But I don't think, to me, technically it went all the way around.
Right.
But I think Drew had already been standing there for so long and these people couldn't spin it. He was just like, 75, you won. She's like, what? And he goes, you won. And she goes, what did I win? And he goes, you get to be in the showcase showdown. She goes, what's that?
Oh, my God.
Drew, just Dusty just bends over laughing. It's just like, and she's just like scrambling around behind him. I'm like, this was the most insane. I've never seen anything like that. I'm so glad I caught this 90 seconds of The Price is Right.
Who is this alien that got onto The Price is Right?
I don't know how that show works.
That's awesome.
Do you recommend this movie?
I absolutely do. Excellent. And I have from when I first watched it. Second watch was probably even better. I'm sure I'll watch it again. Please watch Raw. It is fucking, it's great filmmaking, well acted, well written, plenty hardcore action in there for you gore hounds. It's just a really well-made film, regardless of its genre.
Yeah.
It's just a great movie.
Yeah, I recommend it too. Yeah, this is a weird one to call horror, but yeah, it is kind of horrific for sure.
I'm with you.
But yeah, I recommend it. It's very well made. Everything's enjoyable. Okay, cool. So bye, Dice Tower.
Oh,
it was fun while it lasted.
It was.
But it's a new decade, so so yeah, guess what, Tim? Next week it's Halloween.
Ooh, we should do something special.
We
for that.
Should do something special. How about from 1973? It's The Exorcist.
Everybody's like, they haven't done The Exorcist yet?
They haven't done The Exorcist yet.
We've been saving it up.
Yeah.
We wanted it to be special, and
I just love how this all ended perfectly. Like, the fucking list ended
Just
the week before Halloween. Perfect. Yeah, we got to do this.
And now it's The fucking Exorcist, which this will be, I guess, the main question. It's something that Nan's been bringing up for a couple of weeks now, and that is, like, does this movie hold up?
Yeah.
Like it's 50 years old.
Wow.
50.
That's right.
So does it hold up? Is it still scary? When people talk about it as being the scariest film of all time, is that just nostalgia or is there really something to that?
Yeah, it's been a while. I think the last time I saw this was in high school. So.
Oh, shit, dude. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
I just saw it.
At Fred's house. You remember that party, that Halloween party he had?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I wore blackface. I regret it.
Yeah, well, like this movie says,
it was 1992. I didn't know what I was doing.
You didn't eat people.
No. It was because I loved LL Cool J.
Yeah.
I really did. Mama Said Knock You Out album cover.
Right, you did. You most certainly did, didn't you? God damn it. I forgot that until this moment. Wow.
I'll admit it.
Hey, I mean, you know, better.
That's my vegetarianism. I'm like, kids, do not do the blackface.
Yeah.
Do not.
Yeah. Anything that I say is going to be, I'm just going to skip. I'm going to just absolutely restrain myself. We're going to move past that. But yeah, God, I do remember
Nancy
that.
Nancy had a talk with our daughters and was like, you'll find a way. And she unbuttoned her shirt and just smeared black paint all over her chest.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say better to be dark meat than to eat it, but I'm just saying that. No, I'm sorry. We can cut that out. But anyhow,
no.
What was I at that? That was the one in the basement.
Yeah.
I was like, it was like a last minute. I was like a caveman.
Probably something like that.
I was excited about like having like bone jewelry. which yeah, wasn't the end of it at that point. So plenty of that. Start but of but no, no, the Exorcist. It's one of it's on the Mount Rushmore of horror. So we absolutely are gonna cover the shit out of that. This is one of those things that's daunting. I was telling somebody recently, like it's one thing if we cover a movie like this where it's like it came out in 2016. So you just have to talk about like how the movie came about. When you do like a John Carpenter movie, you're like, I have to talk about 40 fucking years worth of John Carpenter. Like, here we are now with 50 years of history. So it'll be a good informative episode.
Yeah.
And fun.
And I get to do the William Friedkin quote, which I'll do right now. I don't give a flying fuck through a rolling donut what Al Pacino thinks. One of my favorite quotes of all time. All right. Check out our website, slumberpodcastmassacre.com. Check out, send us an email, slumberpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our wildly popular and active social media. Huge thank to our patrons. You help make this show possible. Thank you so much for everything that you do. Tim, do you got anything else to say about Raw?
Not Raw, but like maybe that line was actually just an outtake from Linda Blair, like where she's like, your mom sucks cocks in hell. And I don't give a flying fuck through a rolling donut about Al Pacino. Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is.
I got nothing.
Yeah, there we go. Bye.